Hi everyone, I'm Marie Biancuzzo. I'm here to talk with you now about gut hormones. I'll start out with one that I'm sure you're quite familiar with, and that would be insulin. It's actually a peptide type of hormone that is produced by the pancreas, stored in the Isles of Langerhans. It's triggered by a high blood sugar, so if you've just had a big meal, it kicks in. Now, it would be real important for you to understand what it does, which is it helps lower the blood sugar level by converting the glucose into glycogen. But it's inhibited by norepinephrine. Insulin is a classical negative feedback loop. What does that mean? It means that, in fact, the more sugar that the body has in the blood, the more the insulin is going to say, hey, I got to take care of this. So what happens is that it squirts out enough insulin so that the blood sugars go down, which is all well and good. But remember, with a negative feedback system, it's only going to do that until you reach homeostasis. So of course, one of the things that I'd like to point out is what you probably already know. People that don't have good functioning insulin are called diabetics. And there's a whole lot that we could talk with about that. But I'd just like to mention that as we move along. All right, the next one, I sort of called it a hormone because some people do call it a hormone, but I learned it as being a neurotransmitter, and that is leptin. Leptin is something that addresses adipose tissue. It's produced by adipose tissue, and it is related in some way to satiety. Whether or not it is related to the baby feeling more satiated after he breastfeeds, some think so, some think not so. But in any event, I want you to make sure that you associate this with food, with humoral mechanisms, and understanding what it has to do with eating. All right, the next one that you're probably very familiar with is cortisol. It is, of course, a steroid hormone. It's produced by the adrenal cortex, and target organs are primarily the liver and muscles, but really it's for all tissues. What happens, the cortisol is released when you get that fight-flight situation. You're scared out of your wits about something, and what happens? The body gives you this big squirt of cortisol to control stress. And it does exert some anti-inflammatory effects as well. So one of the things that I want you to make sure that you really understand is that cortisol also affects newborns, especially when they are separated from their mothers. This is a stress issue. So we could go into this a whole lot deeper, but I want you to understand for the moment at least that, and by the way, with kids, they can just measure their cortisol in their saliva. Gastrin is another gut hormone. Food stimulates its release, and along with secretin and cholecystokinin, this is one of the first three gut hormones to be discovered. So when you think about gastrin, I want you to think that gastrin and the next one, which is secretin and cholecystokinin, all kind of go together. Okay? Basically, they are stimulating GI motility. And that's the part that I want you to understand. They're stimulating the GI motility, which is in deep contrast to somatostatin. As we talk about skin-to-skin contact, somatostatin becomes enormously more important. But basically, the nervous system and the digestive system produce the somatostatin, and its main function is to inhibit the secretion of other hormones, for example, growth hormone and insulin, and some enzymes including pepsin, renin, secretin, gastrin. I guess I mixed apples with oranges there. The secretin, gastrin would be something else, but anyway, when released, what happens is somatostatin basically shuts down the gut. Now, that's a little bit of an oversimplification, but what's important here is that then the food just kind of sits in the gut. It does not really become digested. And so you can have food that is simply lingering. And because the gut is shut down, digestion does not occur. So what does somatostatin do? It releases hydrochloric acid. It influences the growth of mucosal cells, and it decreases gastric mobility. Notice how that's different than the first three that I mentioned. And I don't know if I want to say a whole lot more about that. I guess I don't. I do want to point out that I have given you a matching exercise on the following page. And I said you need to match the hormone in column A to the description in column B. I've also given you just a little short thing there. I don't worry too much about whether or not you can apply these to clinical practice. That's really not the goal so much here as for you to understand how you would apply this information when we get to talking a little bit more about clinical practices. But I gave you a couple of simple things there that I think you can probably handle or at least take a stab at. And then the next page, I have given you a thing on matching, I think these are all gut hormones, unless you want to call the leptin a neurotransmitter. But anyway, I've given you a hormone that I would like you to match up with its description. Okay, so I know that sounds pretty heavy duty, but basically what we've talked about here is that hormones are chemical messengers, and they work together throughout the body to affect specific target cells or to affect other hormones. Body responsiveness is subject to negative and positive feedback loops. Some hormones, for example, oxytocin, are regulated by positive feedback loops, but most times you'll be dealing with hormones that are regulated by negative feedback loops. So, because mothers have concerns about milk production and milk ejection, understanding hormones that are associated with these physiologic mechanisms helps to govern clinical management. At the same time, understanding gut hormones and understanding how they are related to stress response and digestion and general behavior and well-being of the baby is also important in clinical management. I'm Marie Biancuto. Thank you so much for joining me.